This is the Jeff Merrick Show on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Welcome back to the program. I want to thank Mike Modano for stopping by. Some memories of the career and thoughts on the statue outside of American Airlines and how key it was to have that jersey flap going at the back. I'm guessing Modano probably never used the fighting strap or the tie down, just so you can get that rippling effect in the bottom of the jersey. Nonetheless, we turn our attention now to Elliot Friedman in sunny Florida, in newsworthy Florida, as we find out now. Elliot, how are you today?
I'm good, thank you. How are you doing?
I'm good. We got a lot to chew on here in a couple of moments. But before we get there, I just want to get your thoughts on Mike Modano. He was just on the program talking about, you know, the statue outside of American Airlines and reminisced about the career and Lou Nanny going to Prince Albert to scout him and then drafting him first overall in 1988. Do you have a thought or two when I say the name Mike Modano to you?
Well, first of all, I just wanted to tell you, I saw Lou Nanny for dinner last night down here in Florida.
Oh, jealous.
And he said that he was disappointed you weren't here, but he said he wasn't surprised because it was your turn for the bill. But it was good to see him. He's always a great guy to see. You know, as for Modano, yeah. You know, I'm really happy for him. I thought it was a really nice event. They had to move it a little bit on Saturday night because of the rain, but I thought it was a really nice event, yep. And I thought it was a really good statue, and he got the shout out from Nowitzki, and you know, he's part of the Wild now. He's a bit more into their hockey ops, and so that ties into a bit of the North Star history, but he's always going to be a Dallas Star too, a key part of that Stanley Cup champ, so I was glad to see him get it. How was he? Was it a good interview?
He was fantastic. I mean, we talked, you know, one of the things that we talked about was, you know, the fear of when you find out someone's creating a statue of you, you know, like that's permanent. And so you want to make sure that it looks good. How many times have you seen statues that look nothing like the person that they're supposed to represent?
Yes.
And he was talking about how happy he was that it actually looked like him. And then he said there's a number of things.
Good.
He said they went through, you know, whether it's the internet or Getty Images to try to find, like, okay, I want this in the statue and this part of me in the statue, and didn't want to do the traditional just holding up the Stanley Cup, which is, you know, obvious for a lot of other players. But, like, you know, Mike, he's a really thoughtful guy. I mean, he's a super hockey player, obviously one of the best ever. He's a Hall of Famer. But I just find that Modano is a really intelligent, fun interview, and you learn a lot about him, and you learn a lot about the game when you talk to him. So, surprise, surprise, Mike Modano was fantastic, and we thank him for stopping by. So, newsworthy things coming out of the general manager's meeting today. It's the conclusion of the meeting, and so it's time for Gary Bettman, the commissioner, to speak, and Deputy Commissioner Bill Daly. Little bit about the Arizona Coyotes and their situation, a speculation about hockey-related revenue in and around $6.2 billion. What were some of the newsier things coming out of the conversations today for you, Elliot?
Well, I think there's really two things. There was a little bit about, obviously, about Arizona, and they were very careful about what they said. We should also discuss Chris Simon, too. They had some they're obviously very guarded in their comments about all this stuff. But first of all, for when it comes to Arizona, it's pretty clear they're trying to give Alex Morello some runway to win this. They basically said that his goal is to win. He's given them an indication that that's what he wants to do. The commissioner said he knows when the auction's going to be held. It's going to be sometime in June. I think it's also going to be when the auction gets posted. You know, I've been told it's going to be interesting to watch what the wording is, the verbiage, because
yes.
could be said that whoever wins this auction has to do this with it. So there is a possibility it comes down to, if you want to build it, then, you know, do you have to build an NHL arena? So we have to wait for that to come out too. We tried all sorts of different ways to get them to bite on things or give us a timeline, and they weren't going to do that. Now, Daly did say after that, if we go to June and we have the auction and they don't win, is there enough time to move for next year? And his answer was probably not. I'm always careful with this stuff because, first of all, when it comes to Arizona, the targets have moved so many times. You just have to be ready for that by now. You should not take anything as a definitive statement. But what it also says to me, Jeff, is my theory that at the same time they're allowing Morello to try and win this auction, I think they've also got their backup plans in place in case this doesn't happen. And that's what, or something goes awry that it can't happen. So I think there's two things happening at the same time.
The closer we get to this auction, or the closer we get to some type of finality, either, you know, permanent or ephemeral here on the Arizona Coyotes, the one thing, Elliot, that I always try to keep in mind is keep all possibilities on the table when you're considering Arizona. Don't take anything off the table whatsoever. Yes. Like, I think that, I mean, it certainly feels like we're in a place where this can go a number of different directions, and maybe even a direction we don't even foresee or haven't even had any conversations about. Like I'm like you, I've had plenty of conversations with people or received, you know, texts or DMs speculating on, well, could this happen? Could that happen? Here's how I think this thing is going to play out. And my response to all of it is maybe. We don't know. It seems like this river could take us a number of different directions. Is that kind of how you approach this story at this point?
Remember grade 3 geography? This river has a lot of tributaries. That's what
tributaries, yes.
There are a lot of tributaries. Jeff, I'm with you. Like, you know, I think if anything's been proven when it comes to Arizona is just when you think you've got it figured out, something else happens. So that's just the way... That's just the way it goes. And so, you know, otherwise here, I mean, you mentioned that they said that revenues are supposed to be $6.2 billion. I mean, I know there's been a lot of concern about the regional TV deals, but generally that doesn't seem to be stopping the revenues going in a good place. I mean, it's going to be interesting what that's going to mean for the salary cap in the next few years. And there's a chance it could be taking some really big jumps, which I think all fans and teams would be happy to hear. It's been, you know, held down the last little while. And, you know, the other thing that came up, obviously, very sadly, was, I mean, there's been two this week, Konstantin Koltsov and Chris Simon. And I didn't know Koltsov that well. I had a few really good exchanges with Chris Simon. There's actually a story I'm writing in the blog for tomorrow, Jeff, or tonight. That there was a time when Calgary Flames went to the Stanley Cup Final in 2004, we couldn't interview Chris Simon in some of the intermissions. And it wasn't that he wasn't good at it. The bottom line is he was too good at it. He gave really thoughtful, detailed answers. And, you know, those intermission interviews are supposed to come in at 60 to 90 seconds. And his were coming in at two and two and a half. Intermissions where, you know, Don Cherry was on. You couldn't do that. Like, there just wasn't time to run it. So they said, okay, you can only interview him at certain times, or you can't interview him during the game because it's just too long. So I always remembered that about him. But, you know, obviously, they're really sad stories. And, you know, I know that, you know, the comments that the league makes about CTE doesn't make everyone happy. You know, I've always been a person who believes, with what I've learned over time, that, you know, CTE does, repeated trauma does lead to CTE. You know, it's tough because hockey and, you know, sports like football and UFC, they're never going to be safe sports. You know, and the one thing I really tried to do ever since my son had his first concussion was really learn about it and say, okay, how can you recover properly, and, you know, what do you have to do to make sure that repeated brain trauma is not an issue? And, you know, one person I would really recommend everybody to follow on social media is Riley Cote. You know, Riley did that job for the Philadelphia Flyers. He was as tough as it got. And he's done a lot of work into therapy and what you can do to help. And, I, you know, first of all, I think anyone who needs help, there's always someone who's willing to listen to you. And secondly, I would just say follow someone like Riley, because, you know, I've learned a lot about what there is to know and what you have to be aware of. But, just really sad stories. I know everybody down here was talking about them.
You know, Mikhail Grabowski is a neighbor of mine. He just lives, not too far from us here. And I called him yesterday as he hadn't heard about Koltsov. And, he was, pretty upset. They played on teams together. They roomed together for a while as well. Like, and, Grabo said he was, the nicest, warmest, friendliest guy. That doesn't necessarily... mean anything towards what he happened, but like the lengths at which Grabo talked about, the person, and how wonderful a guy he was and how much, great times they had together on and off the ice. Like that was like, I know, the Chris Simon passing away, resonates with a lot of hockey fans in North America, certainly. And he played for a number of teams, both in junior hockey and the NHL as well. But, Koltsov's passing, really hit a lot of European hockey players hard, especially a lot of Belarusian players that knew him and played with him. And Mikhail Grabowski is right around the top there. Yesterday when you were on, we talked briefly about a couple of different rule changes that will be put forward now to the competition committee. I don't want to see changes as much as I want to say tweaks here. And the one thing that I was, upon further review, glad that they didn't change just because of the law of unintended consequences around it, they're deciding to leave the overtime alone. And I'm sure there were a number of different proposals, brought forth about, shot clocks or floating blue lines or these types of things. And, I understand where they come from. The only thing that I wonder about when it comes to changing the 3-on-3, outside of maybe getting rid of the lines altogether, is are you just creating another scenario where you pause the game for video review? Things like floating blue line or a stringent center ice line, how do you legislate it? How do you officiate it as well? What was the nature of the discussion around 3-on-3? I know everyone hates the endless neutral zone regroups, etc., but it's kind of, at this point, a necessary evil. And unless we're going to get rid of the coaches, I think it's probably something that's going to be here to stay.
Yeah, I think that I just heard it never really went too far, and I heard a lot of it really died before we even got to the GM meetings, Jeff. I think as you said, I think the issue with I understand that everything that they govern with the NHL is about we don't want to make the games longer, and we don't want more whistles. So that's always part of the issue, is how do you change things without making the games longer and without more whistles? And if they want to change, like they talked about the CHL, which went to 7 minutes, and, that would be a CBA issue. How would the players feel about that? Like, we're talking about, basically all these potential rule changes, they have to negotiate them with the players. If you want to change the LTIR, you have to negotiate that with the players. So you have to figure out, number one, you can't just unilaterally do it. And number two, I think the other thing, too, is you're trying to think of what the change you can make that'll make it better without a stoppage or without a delay. And I just don't know that they have anything. And, again, right now, 70% of the overtimes are ending in overtime. And I'm with you. I'm not crazy about the endless regroupings, but the one thing they said was, look, you get regroupings, but eventually you get your chances. And I think they've just decided that that's probably the best way to live with it now. And for the most part, I probably agree with that. I haven't found an idea yet that makes I guess you could do the idea of making the floating blue line or something like that. But I guess they just feel it's not worth it compared to what they already have. I heard it didn't really gain a lot of momentum for change.
Yeah. You know, the one thing, and I'll be honest with you, Elliot, like regroups are just part of the game anyhow. Are there more in overtime? Well, yeah, and that is, I think, you know, the more that I think about it, it is a reflection of maybe an even, if you want to call it, alarming or distressing phenomenon, and that is the lack of shots. Like when you look back at the beginning of overtime, like for the 3-on-3, when it first joined the NHL, we first had overtime, 3-on-3 overtime in the NHL, it was an endless barrage of, albeit low percentage, but a lot of shots. Players were firing from all angles, and normally that would lead to 2-on-1s, and that made it really exciting. How many times did you see someone take a bad angle shot and it led to an odd man rush the other way? I still maintain that the regroups aren't the problem. The regroups are a sidebar or a symptom of teams looking for the perfect shot and only taking the perfect shot. And if they don't have it, then the recourse is to the neutral zone regroup. But then again, I come back to, well, how are you going to force a player to take a bad shot? Like, how are you going to force someone to shoot? And I don't think they want to go the shot clock route either. But the regroups, really, I think, are an indication of an even bigger problem, which is if it's not the perfect shot right now in overtime, Elliot, guys aren't taking it. They're not.
Well, what you're basically telling me is you want to see players get dumber. Go back to your dumbness when you were taking worse shots.
Yes. 100. You know me. We've talked about this before. I want there to be more sloppiness in the game. NHL is too perfect. The athletes are all amazing. They make really smart plays, and it's wonderful. But give me brain cramps and give me bad shots. Just give me like another, give me a dozen in every game, and I'll be happy, specifically in overtime. Let's bring in the dumb into overtime. Yeah. You want to fix OT? Bring in the dumb.
Hockey is better. You know, when one of the things. Are dumber, Jeff Merrick.
Thank you very much. That's the headline I'll take out of today's program. You know, Rick Tocchet had some interesting comments when he was asked. This is yesterday before Vancouver's, or it might have been actually afterwards. The Vancouver Buffalo game, and he was asked about some of the rule changes and the tweaking to the rules and all that. And the one thing that Tocchet brought up was the phenomenon, and this has happened to the Vancouver Canucks, as we know. There was a situation about a month ago where it happened a couple of different times, and Vancouver fans sort of threw their arms up in the air, and that is the phenomenon of heads snapping back when there's not a stick on their face. And he said, you know, can there be an infraction for this? And I'm not sure how you feel about that one, but I saw the comments, and the first thing I thought of was it's not a I don't necessarily think it's a player trying to dive, but let me know if you're like me. If anyone puts a stick near my face, I'm snapping my head back as far as I can to get away from that stick, not to draw a penalty, but just not to get hurt. Like, I know it looks like the player is trying to dive or draw a penalty, but in a fast game, when you put a stick up around a player's face, the natural reaction for a human being is, I'm going to move my head as far back from that blade as possible. I know Vancouver Canucks fans may not want to hear this, may want to assume this should be a penalty every time, that it's akin to diving. I don't see it that way. Do you see it that way?
You know, I've had a lot of conversations about this over the last few years, and I have some theories. First of all, yes, I think in general, we would all flinch if something like that happened to us, except for like that one Kobe Bryant gif where the guy shoves the ball in his face and just glares at him. Like, Kobe Bryant was not flinching. He was not flinching. But I think a lot of people would flinch. You know, I'll say this, like, Rick Tocchet comes from an era where, I mean, diving was incredibly frowned upon. Like, there were, I mean, everybody's talking about Bill Barber but it was in the Hall of Fame.
Yes.
But there was a lot, like, there was a big anti-diving group back then. Like, Kevin Dineen, when he coached, he was a huge anti-diving guy. And he had a conversation when he coached the Panthers, I remember, he had a conversation before the season that we will not be diving here. Like, that is not happening. And so, like, I know that Tocchet comes from a generation that believes that, and generally I agree with them too. I think the thing is that the people who do flinch, they ruin it for everybody else. Like, Thomas Plekanec was a great player, but the referees, they all hated him because he was notorious for that. And, like, that's what I think. I mean, people have also made the argument before, Jeff, that in Tocchet's era, you were used to sticks being much more around your face than these guys are now, because the game was a lot rougher at the time. So, but I just generally think that people can say, oh, well, if a stick's in your face, you're going to flinch. Yes, but the ones that do it to dive, they ruin it for everybody else.
True. A couple of things from last night I want to go over with you. Big win last night by the Detroit Red Wings, the one they had to have. Didn't look good early. Somehow Detroit manages to get back into this one. Great to see Konstantinov there yesterday in attendance, celebrating his birthday. It's funny, I was mentioning this off the top of the show. Yesterday after the program, I had extra 90 minutes in my life, and I rewatched the Russian Five. So I had Konstantinov very much on my mind as I was watching this Wings game, and there he is with his family and the wave, and I just loved him as a defenseman, and just memories of him, you know, crushing guys on that Red Wings lineup. Nonetheless, the Detroit Red Wings finally win a must-win game. Do you have I'm not sure how much you're able to watch there in Florida right now, but do you have a thought on the Red Wings phenomenon from last night?
Well, you know what? I didn't see much of that game at all, except that they were within, 12 seconds of losing, and they snatched defeat from the jaws of victory. So that was obviously pretty massive. I did see your retweet this morning of the Konstantinov ovation, which I thought was really well,
so good.
Really well done. And on the broadcast, you know, Mickey Redman's commentary with Ken Daniels was excellent. just remember, you talk about Hall of Famers and all the Hall of Famers that played for the Wings, you know, there's so much what if there, and it's so sad, Jeff, but he probably would have been one too.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, he was
totally
just a great player, and I just like how the Red Wings and their fans have never forgotten. Like, that's very important. Very important.
Absolutely. Your thoughts on John Tortorella and Sean Couturier? And I'm not sure if you saw the Brandon Dubinsky tweet from this morning.
I did.
So now there's ex-players that are weighing in. Listen, Dubinsky played for Tortorella with the Rangers and the Columbus Blue Jackets. The relationship didn't always go swimmingly, but nonetheless, Brandon Dubinsky with a tweet this morning with the hashtag Free Couturier and a good shot at John Tortorella, who last night in the postgame really did not want to answer questions about Sean Couturier, just deferring to, we're dressed in our best 20 and that's it. Now, the question becomes, if you believe in the philosophy, if you don't change a winning lineup, do we see Sean Couturier in a Flyers uniform against the Carolina Hurricanes tomorrow? Last time I checked, Elliot, Carolina is kind of good. And they showed that again last night against the Islanders. Do you have a thought on everything torts Dubinsky, Couturier, and tomorrow's game against Carolina?
Well, first of all, when it comes to Dubinsky, I don't have a problem with anybody having an opinion. You know, Brandon Dubinsky is entitled to his opinion as much as, you know, anybody else would be. The funny thing for me about Dubinsky is he seems to be the kind of player that Tortorella would absolutely love. So, you know, that was interesting. But you know what? He's entitled to his opinion. No issues here at all. You know, the one thing with Tortorella I wasn't crazy about yesterday was that he didn't talk in the morning after it became known that Couturier was going to be scratched. Now, I understand that Philly has a bit of a unique routine, and it's not unusual for it to play out the way it did yesterday. But I don't know. Like, if it was me and I was the head coach, I would say I've got to be there to deal with that. Look, it's his roster. The one thing that's interesting with me here is it sounds like Couturier doesn't understand why he's being scratched. And Tortorella's comments last night, because I watched the post game, made it seem to me like he had told Couturier why he had been scratched. So I don't know if that conversation happened after the morning skate or when it happened or what exactly here. There seems to be some difference of opinion here. Look, I don't expect Couturier to be happy about it. I don't have a problem with him being unhappy about it. I think if you're a player and you get scratched, you deserve one chance, even if you're the captain, to say, I don't really like this. And then you have to move on. From what I understand, one of the issues here, like people are saying Couture's only scored one goal in 27 games. And other people are like, he's played really well. From what I understand, it's like Tortorella might be worried about his pace of play. And can he keep up against really fast teams? And so that's Tortorella's decision to make. Like, the one thing I'll say about Tortorella is he's consistent. Like, nobody gets special treatment there.
Oh, yeah.
And I would say, as if I was a player or an employee somewhere, I would just say, like, I know that this could happen to me at time. But, again, I'm with you. Like, tomorrow night, like, Couturier, when you look at that Flyers roster, he should be playing against Carolina. Like, Carolina is the type of team that Sean Couturier should be playing against. And I am curious to see if they say, oh, we're not changing a winning lineup, or does he go back out there? But the only thing about it yesterday is the two questions I have. Number one, what were the conversations like? Because they seem to be telling different stories. And number two, I do think Tortorella should have spoken about it in the morning after it became clear that he was a scratch.
Mentioning Carolina, big win last night. We'll conclude on this one. 4-1 against the Islanders. Seth Jarvis with a pair. Brady Shea, who's been fantastic this season with a pair of assists here. New York Islanders have now lost 5 in a row, 6 goals in their last 5 games. We know how at times angry Patrick Waugh has been through all of this. This is a bad scenario for the Islanders. Friege, we've talked about it all year long. They need help goal scoring. We thought some help might come at trade deadline. That didn't happen. What do you make of the Islanders right now? We'll finish on that.
Well, you know, I don't even know what to say anymore. We've talked about them like 3 podcasts in a row and a number of times on this show, Jeff. And, you know, I really don't know what to say. They're really struggling. They've split guys up. They've benched guys. They benched Engvall last night. I don't know. Like, I just, you know, maybe the answer is they're just not good enough. I mean, maybe it's just as simple as that, Jeff. Maybe they're just not good enough. You know, Waugh talked about shortening shifts now. I don't know how many games in a row. Maybe the answer is just a simple one. They're just not good enough because it's happening at the wrong time, and I'm really surprised to see it. And the other thing, too, is, like I said, he's tried everything. He's split off Barzal and Horvat. He's tried them together. He's talked about shorter shifts. He said, I can't believe the way this team plays. Last night, he scratches Engvall. You know, Sorokin struggled a little bit. It's not like Y isn't trying all sorts of different things to stop, to get them going. But And now the other thing, too, is that some teams here, they're starting to right themselves. Like, you know, Washington is starting to right itself. Detroit's won 2 out of 3. Even though last night was a little bit nervous. Philadelphia has kind of stopped the bleeding a little bit here. So, like, that to me is the concern, is that we've been joking about how this is like a snail's race to the second wild card spot. Now it looks like some of these teams might actually be sorting themselves out, and that's when you're in trouble. Mm.
Absolutely. Okay. Busy day for you again. Get back to it. Thanks as always for parking time and some memories of Mike Modano to kick it off, and finishing off with the common refrain, what's wrong with the Islanders? Thanks, pal. Enjoy the rest of your day.
Well, you know what? I'm just in a car driving up towards Fort Lauderdale with Michael Russo. And I have to say, Michael, very aggressive but safe driver. I like this. He's not taking any BS. He's in command of the road, but I don't feel like my future is in any danger.
Did you both partake in cigars last night? I know that's a tradition for you and Russo when you get together, especially when Lou Nanny's
cigars.
There.
Cigars. Like, two losers, we bucked up on the purchasing of cigars, so there were no cigars. We'll have to do it at the Stanley Cup Final this year.
Tell Russo I'm disappointed in him. Very disappointed. I live through him and smoking cigars now. You be good. Elliot Friedman from 32 Thoughts and Hockey Night in Canada.